Recently, I have had several people ask about the differences between city government and county government. Today, we're going to talk to the experts.
Hello, listeners. We had planned to do an in-studio recording of Hashtag Local Gov Matters this week with Kurt Witinski from the League of Wisconsin Municipalities and John Hockamer from the Wisconsin Counties Association. But the snowstorm that decided to hit Madison this week hit at the same time we were supposed to record. So today's podcast was done by cell phone. Thanks for your patience.
Hello, and welcome to Hashtag Local Gov Matters. I'm Gwen Gunther, president of Wheeler Reports. Let me introduce my two guests for today. Kurt Witinski, the deputy director of the League of Wisconsin Municipalities. Hello, Kurt.
Morning, Gwen.
And John Hockamer, the outreach manager for the Wisconsin Counties Association. Hello, John.
Good morning, Gwen.
Where to start? All right, let's start with the definition. Kurt, what is the definition of a municipality?
Well, a municipality is, technically could be a city, village, or a town. But when we're talking in this context, I think we're talking about cities and villages, which are the incorporated local governments in the state of Wisconsin. And they have slightly different powers than a town would have. We refer to those as home rule powers. And like a town, though, a city and village are a unit of government that's been created to provide services to a distinct area.
Okay. So included in municipalities are villages and cities. Is that correct?
Correct.
All right. But a town is something different. That's smaller.
Well, not necessarily. Towns historically are earlier in creation because they were more designed at the time the state was surveyed. Every town was 36 square miles. And cities and villages are originally were created by the legislature, but in the last 100 years or so, there's been a process for incorporation. There are about 412, 413 villages in the state and 190 cities, and there are 1,250 or so towns in the state.
All right, so John, then what's the definition of a county?
So, Kurt mentioned those that live in a city, village, or in a town. So, whether you live in a city, village, or a town, all residents of the state live in a county. So, the municipalities and the unincorporated areas of the county make up the county. There are 72 counties in the state, and the boundaries for counties were established by the legislature, and those boundaries do not change. Just like the cities and villages, the statutes say that we are a body corporate. That means that we are recognized as a legal entity, and also not just as a legal entity, but that we're created by the state. And I mention that to county government all the time, that because we're created by the state can make changes. They can add things to our authority. They can also take things away from us. Just a couple examples that I wanted to talk about. Just mentioned that counties are viewed as the agents of the state or an arm of the state government because there's many things that we are required to do that counties are required to do enforce certain state laws. For example, the county sheriff's department, they would apprehend violators of state laws. The county clerks manage state elections, register deeds. They keep certain state records such as birth and death certificates. They also have marriage licenses and property deeds. And then just to reinforce that counties are an arm of state and do a lot of things for them, we are only one of 13 states in the country where counties in Wisconsin provide the delivery of human services programs for the state. We have county-owned nursing homes, which a lot of the states don't. It would be a state nursing home. All 72 of our counties have county veteran services offices. Other states, they do that at the state level versus the county level. And then one area where we are very unique, counties are very unique in the state of Wisconsin, and that is our contracts and our partnerships with the state of Wisconsin for the highway departments. So once a state or federal highway system is built, then it becomes the responsibility of the counties to do the maintenance and the snow removal on the state and federal highway system, as well as on the county trunk highway system.
All right. Well, when we come back, we're going to talk more about specific types of local governance.
The Wisconsin Counties Association represents Wisconsin's 72 counties at both the state and federal level. Learn more about how counties impact your community at wicounties.org.
Welcome back to Hashtag Local Gov Matters. I'm Gwen Gunther of the Wheeler Report, and I'm joined today by John Hockamer, Outreach Manager for Wisconsin Counties Association, and Kurt Watinski, the Deputy Director for the League of Wisconsin Municipalities. So, Kurt, one thing that seems to confuse people is, what is the difference between a city administrator and a mayor?
Well, so the Office of City Administrator has really evolved over time. It's a hybrid office that local communities have created to adjust to the complexity of managing local government. So there's really no mention in state law about a city administrator. And I would distinguish between a city administrator, a village administrator, a city manager, a village manager. There actually is statutory, there's a section of the statute that's devoted to the creation of a city manager or village manager form of government. It's chapter 64 of the state statute. So the community would have to adopt a charter ordinance to go to a referendum to create a city manager. That is, when you don't have a mayor, you have to have a person who's been hired to run or implement all phases of the city or the village. And that's a city manager. There are about 10 city managers for communities in the state out of 190, and then there are about 10 village manager form of government in the state of Wisconsin out of about 413. So administrator is different in that it's an unelected position. It can be created in a variety of ways. Communities have designated their court treasurer as their administrator, or they've actually passed an ordinance saying, hey, we're going to create this city administrator position to operate and administer and manage the day-to-day operations of the community. We're going to leave the governing body, which is headed by the mayor, the village president, to determine policy and direction and the vision for the community, but the day-to-day operations to be conducted by the, overseen by the administrator. There's about 200 plus cities and villages with administrator titles or offices that have been created. It's a growing position, again, reflecting the growing complexity of running a city or a village. The mayor, on the other hand, the village president, is an elected office, and the mayor is the chair of the common council meeting and helps the council develop the overall policy that guides the city, the direction of the city. The village president lacks the same authority as the mayor. They don't have the president's ability to veto an ordinance passed by the village board. They can veto something that's passed by the common council. The president does chair the village board meeting, but has a vote on every item that comes before the village board, just like any other trustee. So in a lot of ways, it's indistinguishable from other trustees other than kind of a figurehead of the village. The mayor, on the other hand, does not vote on every item, every ordinance that comes before the city, unless there's a tie vote, and then the mayor, like I mentioned, has a veto authority. So that's a quick run through the differences between a mayor, a village president, and an administrative officer or a man.
Okay. John, now what's the difference between a county executive and a county administrator?
Well, the major differences between the two positions are that the county executive is elected on a county-wide basis, versus the county administrator being appointed by the county board. And then secondly, the county executive has veto authority, much like the governor does. The statutes require that a county administrator be appointed, based on their training and expertise, experience, and education. And then the statutes also require that a county executive or a county administrator prepare and submit the annual budget to the county board. So that's one thing that has been different in those counties that have a county executive or county administrator, that they are required by law, the administrator and executive, to prepare prepare and submit the annual budget to the county board. And then since the mid-80s, there is a third form of county structure created by the legislature again, which is the county administrative coordinator position. And the statutes require that if a county does not have a county executive or a county administrator, then the county must have a county administrative coordinator. The county administrative coordinator is appointed again by the county board. However, what's different in the statutes, it says that a county administrative coordinator is responsible for coordinating, rather than when you look at a county executive or county administrator, the statute says that they coordinate and direct. So again, for an administrative coordinator, they're responsible for coordinating, but for a county executive and county administrator, says that they coordinate and direct. So the statutes and the Constitution really doesn't give a lot of guidance on the responsibilities or the authority of a county administrative coordinator, but it's very specific for county executive and county administrator. So currently of the 72 counties, we see, of the 72 counties, there are 11 counties that have a county executive, 28 counties have county administrators, and 33 counties have administrative coordinators. Now, two things. The administrative coordinators, they have a job description in many cases that's developed by the county board. That job description will lay out what their duties and responsibilities are rather than the statutes and the Constitution. The trend that we're seeing over the past 10 years certainly is that those counties with county administrative coordinators are moving to county administrators.
Well, that was my next question. Can they change what kind of leadership that they have, and how do they go about changing from a coordinator to an administrator or possibly to a county exec?
We have not seen a county that has gone to a county executive and then go to one of the other two forms of government. One thing I didn't mention, and it only impacts Milwaukee County, the statutes, and it was recently changed, the threshold is any county with 750,000 in population or more must have a county executive. Until the last session, that number was 500,000, and it would have included Dane County. Dane County has a county executive as well, but that threshold was changed. How do you create those positions? They can be done two ways. One is the county board on their own, and it takes a simple majority vote of the county board to create those positions, and then they would move forward with that and change all the governing documents that either they have a county executive or a county administrator. The second way that it can be done is the public, by petition and a successful referendum, can create those positions. And if it is a successful referendum, then the county, it's not an option for them. The public has passed the referendum, so the county must move in that regard. So the most recent county, in Portage County in 2006, there was a petition and a referendum. The referendum failed. They went back. They had a subsequent referendum, and the second one passed. And so the county executive position was created, and the county was required to move in that regard.
What about at the municipality level, Kurt? Can they change their type of government, and how do they go about doing that?
Yeah, so city manager form of government is more a formal process that's spelled out in the statutes, and it requires either adoption of a charter ordinance creating that, which is a special process where the council would create it, or it could be created by petition of the voters and then at a referendum vote. And so, interestingly, it's been pretty stable as far as the number of cities and villages with city manager form of government. It's hovered right around 10 each. Occasionally, you hear communities that have city manager form of government. Some citizens or council members will say, oh, we should go back to the mayor form of government. And then vice versa, you have some communities with mayoral council form of government. People might suggest that we should go, look into having a city administrator or city manager. So if the discussions rise and fall over the course of time, but it's pretty stable as city manager number. City administrator, though, that trend has definitely been
community kind of arrives at how it wants to create the position of administrator on its own. Typically, it's done by ordinance, and there's some model ordinances out there floating around that communities use. But it can be done just by appointing someone into a position and naming, giving them that title, and not so formally adopting it through some kind of ordinance. And like John observed with respect to counties, when communities go to an administrator, they tend not to drop that position because it becomes critical to the day-to-day operations of the city and managing the city or the village.
Okay. Well, so let's talk about revenue for a second, guys. What are the different revenue sources for the counties, John?
Sure, there's a couple of them. I'll start with shared revenue and utility aid payments. That's one source of revenue that the counties receive from the state. However, counties receive significantly less today than they did 15 years ago. The state has reduced the amount of money in the pot of money for shared revenue and utility aid, and I'm sure Kurt will talk about shared revenue as well. Another significant funding for the counties is county transportation. That also comes from the state. In recent years, that transportation funding has also dropped significantly until last year, when we saw an increase in general transportation aids in the amount of 12.9%. Those are the larger revenue sources that we get from, that counties get from the state: shared revenue and utility aid payments and county transportation funding. Then at the local level, we have the property taxes that are collected, and everyone's real happy in December when they get their property tax bill. But the property taxes are collected at the local level, and they make up the bulk of our local revenues for county operations that are not funded with state aids. However, since 2005, the state has imposed levy limits with a cap of the amount of property tax increase to either 0% or to the percentage of net new construction, if that net new construction is greater than 0%. So, we have the levy limits. We saw the downturn in the economy in 2008. Because of that, a lot of construction either stopped or slowed down dramatically. So we didn't see a lot of growth statewide in the net new construction. And then the state also allows counties to enact a 0.5% sales tax. And currently, 66 of the 72 counties have enacted that optional county sales tax. And then another revenue source, although it's not enacted by many counties, would be the optional wheel tax. And the revenue from the wheel tax, if a county were to impose that wheel tax, or any municipality were to impose the wheel tax, those funds can only be used for transportation-related purposes. That pretty much wraps up the revenue sources for the counties.
Okay. How about you, Kurt? How do cities and municipalities get their revenue?
Pretty similar to counties in a lot of respects. So we depend on state aids, and that comes in a form of shared revenue. And as John had described, that amount of money, the total funding for that program, has eroded over the years. Just to throw one statistic out there, so since 2000, so the last 18, 19 years, $94 million has been cut from the shared revenue program, and that's the portion that goes to cities, villages, and towns only, and none of that has been restored. So it's been a downward trend on state aid in the form of shared revenue, which is a much bigger component of a city or village's budget than, say, a county or a town shared revenue. So that $94 million hit cities and villages particularly hard. And then also we have general transportation aid to the state, which, again, we've taken a hit on. We're still $5 million in the hole, even with the bump into general transportation aids that went to local government last session. And then there are a variety of other programs, from recycling grants to municipal services program, which the state pays local governments for police and fire services that they provide state facilities. All these programs have been cut or are, we would say, underfunded from 15, 20 years ago. So then our local source of revenue is the property tax for the most part. That cities and villages rely on that almost exclusively for their own local revenue sources. We don't have the sales tax like counties do. We
do have the ability to have a wheel tax or a local vehicle registration fee. Only about 25 cities, villages, towns, and counties in the state have a wheel tax, Dane County being one of them and the City of Madison being one of them. We do have the ability at the local level to have a room tax, which we collect for, basically it's like a sales tax on lots, you know, hotel rooms. That money, though, is statutory required, 70% of it's statutory required to be used on tourism promotion development. 30% can go into the general fund of the city or village. But it's really not an area of growth for revenue purposes for us. I just like to say, so Wisconsin is unique among states, fairly unique in that we have such a narrow options of raising revenue locally. So if you're in Illinois or Iowa or Colorado, it's like a state, there would be a few more revenue options usually at the local level that a community could pick and choose from. So you have a sales tax, local sales tax, or maybe a local income tax, telecommunication taxes, utility taxes. So all, and we've teamed up with the Wisconsin Realtors Association, our association has, to contract with the Public Policy Forum out of Milwaukee to do some research on how do other states or other local governments to fund their service delivery. And are there some best practices we could lift from these other states and talk to legislators in our state about expanding beyond the property tax, because it is the most frustrating, as John alluded, the most frustrating tax for taxpayers, bar none. And we want to figure out ways to kind of spread the pain so that we're not so reliant on the property tax.
Interesting.
I should just mention, too, that for other services like sewer and water, which are one of the key services that cities provide, the users of those services, you get a utility bill, you pay for your water, you pay for your sewer when you live in a city or a village. And so that's another critical source of revenue that goes obviously right into those utilities.
All right. Well, stay tuned. There's more to come.
The League of Wisconsin Municipalities advocates for Wisconsin's 600 cities and villages, speaking up for local democracy and common-sense citizen-led government. Learn more at lwm-info.org.
You're listening to Hashtag Local Gov Matters. I'm Gwen Gunther of the Wheeler Report, and today's guests are Kurt Witinski, the Deputy Director for the League of Wisconsin Municipalities, and John Hockemer, the Outreach Manager for the Wisconsin Counties Association. So we only have a few minutes left, guys. Kurt, can you tell me, can cities and villages expand their borders? Can they grow the size? Because I don't think that counties can.
Right, that's one of the unique features of being incorporated city or village in Wisconsin, is it is possible for the city or village to grow in size of territory. In Wisconsin, the process is called annexation, and it's driven by property owners in the unincorporated areas on the fringes of the city or village, but just outside their border. And property owners who are interested in entering into the city or village, and their property abuts, their land abuts the city or village, can petition for annexation into the city or village. Oftentimes, the official, a developer will, or an industry or a business will be interested in receiving the full range of urban services, which typically would include wastewater treatment and water. And maybe it's critical to the business or the residents. Septic system is not working out anymore, so they're very eager to join into the city's system, and so they want to annex to the city or village. And there's a process for doing that, and ultimately that's how cities and villages grow. There's some misunderstanding out among the public that a city or village can unilaterally gobble up town territory and make it part of the city or village, and that's really not a possibility. It has to be initiated by the landowner, and then they come to the city or village and say, hey, we would like to enter the city or village.
Okay. So, John,
the counties do a lot of things on their own, but then they also do a lot of things in collaboration with the villages and with the cities. What are some of the things that you guys collaborate with?
Well, I think probably the most examples are creating joint EMS, emergency medical service districts. We've seen a number of mergers between 911 dispatch centers. That's probably where we see most of the examples in that collaboration. Some villages will contract with the sheriff's department to provide law enforcement for services within the municipal boundaries. We've seen some merging between counties and cities with public health departments. And then I would say that there are many, numerous examples of economic development agencies throughout the state, which are, in some cases, a collaborative effort between the counties and the municipalities, and sometimes they include the private sector as well. So those are some of the examples that come to mind.
All right. Well, that's the end of today's podcast. I want to thank both of you for taking the time out of the middle of this big snowstorm that just hit us to talk with me over the phone. And for additional information or for some links to special documents that will follow up with some of this information, you can go to www.thewheelerreport.com and check out the podcast details. We'd like to thank Community Radio that plays our podcast, Rice Lake Radio 105.5 FM, Wapaka Radio 96.3 FM, and Sun Prairie Radio 103.5 FM. Thank you to the League of Wisconsin Municipalities and the Wisconsin Counties Association for working with me on this podcast, and thanks to Jackie Johnson for always doing our sound editing. Thank you again, guys.